by a scientific entity. In the cases which have come under your observation, it was partially owing to your deep interest in animal life of all kinds, as a naturalist, but even more on account of the great affection which the animals who appear in your midst still feel for their late owners on Earth, who happened to be present at the same time that you also were experimenting with us. That was the happy combination which drew them towards you. The parrot, for instance, was devoted to the mistress of the house in which we were conducting our experiments, and also to one of her daughters, both of them being present in the very room in which the parrot had spent so many years of its life, whilst you also were present, the happy combination. The little wild animal from India was equally devoted to his late mistress, and appears to her constantly, as you know, but always only when you are present, once more the happy combination. Love with them, as with us, masters all difficulties. But how they manage to obtain the material for their temporary bodies I do not understand, temporary bodies which are such accurate replicas of those which they occupied when on earth that even, as you saw, the very color and texture of the hair which covered the body of the little animal during its life on earth is reproduced exactly on its temporary body. 1Q. By G. B. You say that when inhabiting these temporary bodies the animals are entirely beyond your control. How is this? A. Their actions are altogether independent of us. Whilst we are busily engaged in conducting our experiments with human entities who wish to materialize in your midst, the animals get into the room in some way which we do not understand, and which we cannot prevent, obtain, from somewhere, sufficient matter with which to build up temporary bodies, coming just when they choose, roaming about the room just as they please, and disappearing just when it suits them, and not before, and we have no power to prevent this so long as the affection existing between them and their late owners is so strong as it was in the instances which have come under our notice. Q. By another sitter. But surely you do not mean to say that the countless billions and trillions of animals which have existed on Earth since the day when the first signs of animal life appeared on Earth, live on after their deaths? How could there possibly be space for them in the spheres? A. Friend, I will answer your question as to what space is, when you tell me what eternity is. The spirit of the animal, more especially of the animal in which affection has been stimulated during its life on Earth, clothed in its spiritual body, an exact counterpart of its earth body when at its state of greatest perfection, with its spiritual counterpart of the brain, the mind, passes into the sphere in which the animals dwell, there to lead happy and contented lives, without fear of torture by either human beings or by other animals, for their innate love of slaughter, and all need for such slaughter is, at death, removed from them forever. There the naturalist may solve the many problems connected with animal life of all kinds which so puzzled him when on earth. There, as was said by one of your ancient writers, the wolf and the lamb, the leopard and the kid, lie down together, one for even nature's fiendish cruelties cannot touch them in that sphere. There the poor creature which during its earth life suffered indescribable tortures at the hand of man, finds perfect peace and rest, and there the faithful friend of former years, be it beast or bird, will most assuredly be found waiting to welcome its loving master or mistress with the utmost joy, for love is king there. 1 Isaiah 11:6. You referred to nature's fiendish cruelties just now. I cannot conceive the creator of the human infant, for instance, creating the leopard to mangle and destroy that infant. A. You will yet learn that there were many creators. This fact is referred to in your sacred writings, where the gods say, "Let us make man in our image and after our likeness." 1:1 Genesis I. 26. The word used throughout this chapter is Elohim, the gods, plural always, partial and full form materializations. We find that it is generally admitted by the entities that in order to economize the power during our experiments, and with a view to preventing the system of the sensitive being drained of too much vitality, full-form materializations are rare, the majority being partial materializations only. These may be classified as, 1, a forehead, eyes and nose only, with no powers of speech. 2, a complete face, but minus the back of the head, with no powers of speech. 3, the head and neck, with vocal organs complete. 4. The head, with neck and shoulders, arms and hands, but nothing more. This is one of the most common. 5. The head and body complete down to the waist only. 6. The head, complete body, with legs and feet, the rarest of all. On several occasions, strangers, who had been admitted to some of our experimental meetings as guests of our members, abused the hospitality thus shown to them by breaking conditions when we were experimenting in a subdued light, and were unable to see what they were doing. Quite half a dozen of these men have afterwards confessed that when a materialized form was opposite to them, and within 2 or 3 feet of them, and at a distance of 2 or 3 yards from the sensitive, they had extended their legs and feet, and had passed them across and over the spot where the form was to be seen, in order that they might feel the lower limbs of the entity. But in every instance they have reported that nothing whatever obstructed the motion of their legs and feet, greatly to their confusion and surprise. In other words, they had found that there was nothing whatever tangible in the way of lower limbs attached to the upper portion of the materialized body in front of them, proving conclusively that the materialization was only a partial one, and was not full form. At an experimental meeting held at Battersea Rise, London, S.W. men only being present, and Sir William Crookes sensitive, Mrs. Corner, acting as sensitive for us, the French girl one had been standing in our midst for nearly half an hour answering questions asked by medical men and other scientists, who formed the half circle of sitters on that occasion, questions which, with 2 exceptions, are not suitable for publication here. Q. By Dr. A. C., from your appearance, and the firmness of your arms, hands, and bust, I assume that you are at this moment fully materialized. Please show us your lower limbs so as to convince us of this fact. A. No, doctor, I cannot do that now, but if you will give me time to return to Flory, the sensitive, for 2 minutes, I will get more power, and will then gladly do so. She returned to the spot where the sensitive was seated on her chair in a state of deep trance, and in less than 2 minutes she once again walked into our midst, and lifting up her white draperies, showed us her legs bared from the knees downwards. She then placed one of her little feet upon Dr. A.C.'s knee, and permitted him to touch both her leg and foot, in order to prove to him and to us that she was fully materialized in every respect. Q. By Dr. A.C., how is it that you had no lower limbs 3 minutes ago, and were obliged to return to the sensitive before you could obtain them? A. Doctor, when we come to you people on earth in this way, our great desire is that we may be recognized first by our voices, then by our faces. That is the reason why so many of us materialize only the head, throat, arms, and hands, and the upper portion of our bodies. That is quite enough for you to identify us by, as a rule, and in doing this we are able to save the power for the use of other entities who may wish to materialize as soon as we have finished. Tonight there is any amount of power here, as you 7 men are all in such good health, and as only 2 of us intend to use it, I am able to show myself to you fully materialized from head to foot, just as my predecessor Katie used to do, through this very sensitive, to Sir William Crookes. But you may take it from me as a fact that full-form materializations in this country are rare, for the reason which I have stated, the vast majority being partial materializations only. Loosening the ties, Q. Will you explain more clearly what you mean by urging upon us to leave all undesirable earth conditions behind us, when we pass out of our physical bodies at the change which we term death? A. Friend, could you but witness the pitiful sights which we see around us, as we carry on our mission work amongst the inhabitants of the first sphere, you would realize the vast importance of our frequent injunction to you all to loosen your earth ties before passing out of your bodies, so that such ties shall not tend to draw you back to earth in order that you may obtain a sense of gratification from them. Had you developed your gift of clairvoyance, or clear seeing, there would be no need for you to ask such a question as this of us, as you would be able to see for yourself, with your spiritual sight, at any time if you chose to do so, the miseries endured by the unhappy beings from the first sphere, the earthbound spirits of men and women of all classes, From the very highest socially down to the very poorest and most degraded, earthbound spirits who crowd your cities, towns, and villages, day and night, seeking to gratify, yes, and actually gratifying, their animal natures, the ones which they have brought over to that sphere from your earth, through the instrumentality of the unhappy beings, the carnal-minded men and women of earth of all classes, that these first sphere entities are able to control and use for this special purpose. So true it is, in both your world and ours, that like attracts like. Gambling, the love of dress, the love of your cruel blood sports, comma one in the love of gold, hold legions of well-educated, as well as ignorant, men and women, who have passed out of their bodies for the last time, closely to earth. One he who loves, and succors and saves even the least of God's creatures, ministers to God himself. Gluttony, the inordinate desire for food, and even worse, insobriety, the craving for intoxicating drink, and yet one state even lower still, animalism, the craving for sensuality, these hold countless legions of all classes to earth, as earth-bound spirits, who seek to gratify, and do actually gratify, those desires, through the carnal-minded people who exist in such vast numbers on your earth today. Round your banqueting halls, your restaurants and eating houses, swarm legions of those from the first sphere who still crave for the food of earth, the carnivorous man or woman, the gourmand, the glutton, endeavoring to gratify themselves, as spirits, through the excesses of the human epicures they overshadow as they feast. Round the drinking saloons of your hotels, round the bars of your inns and public houses, swarm legions of those, from the first sphere, craving for alcoholic drink, and not only satisfying this craving as the wretched mortal imbibes his, or her, wine, beer, or alcohol, but actually urging that mortal to buy, or even to steal, more and more, until at length he, or she, falls to the ground helpless, as miserable drunkard, the controlling, overshadowing being from the first sphere reveling in their drunkenness, as it satisfies their craving for alcohol for a time. And this is true also of animalism, sensuality, your public parks and open spaces, your brothels and dens of infamy, as you term them, are surrounded day and night by countless legions of those from the first sphere, who seek to gratify, and do actually gratify, their animal desires, through the actions of the men and women of earth, the carnal-minded ones, who are imbued with similar desires and are able to carry them into effect, the controlling, overshadowing beings from the first sphere urging them on to greater and still greater excesses, until at length the unhappy mortal drifts into the hospitals specially prepared to receive such cases, into the prisons, the asylums, or even terminates his, or her, earth life as a suicide, through his animalism. Can you wonder, then, that knowing as we do of the horrors awaiting those who pass out of their earth bodies with their animal passions still enthralling them in their deadly embrace, can you wonder that we urge upon you to loosen the ties of earth, to so master yourselves here and now that you shall leave behind you forever all undesirable conditions on earth, when you pass out of your physical bodies for the last time and enter upon the spheres of active life. Fraudulent Phenomena Q. By G. B. We find that one of the greatest obstacles in the way of inducing scientifically trained men and women to investigate the claims made by you entities that the phenomena which you offer for our investigation are genuine, is the fear that they may be cleverly tricked by the sensitive or his confederates, and that an investigation under such conditions as these is therefore a mere waste of time. Can you help us to answer such objections? A. Friend, you will find that fraud is to be found in practically everything on earth: sport, trade, professions, politics, art, science, and above all in every one of the numerous religions of earth without exception, but that undoubted fact does not prove that there is nothing genuine in any of them. And the ideal investigator, the happy possessor of an open, and, consequently, well-balanced mind, instead of passing an offhand judgment, that as all of them are known to be stained deeply with fraud, they are not worthy of his consideration, will carefully sift out for himself the golden grains of wheat from the mass of useless chaff. This is the spirit in which the investigator of the claims made by us, that the phenomena witnessed at your, Experimental meetings are perfectly genuine, should commence and should carry on his inquiry into these matters, matters of the most profound importance to him. Now, in dealing with the general question of fraudulent practices in connection with the production of physical phenomena, which, of course, includes what you also wrongly term materializations, let us say at once that we fully realize the possibility of this, and will deal with the matter under two heads, viz., conscious fraud on the part of the sensitive and his confederates. Unconscious fraud on the part of the sensitive, which really amounts to conscious fraud on the part of the controlling entity, operating through the unconscious sensitive. In a previous chapter 1 you have dealt fully with the precautions which you, as an expert, consider should be taken in order to prevent conscious fraud on the part of the sensitive and his confederates, and with these precautions I fully agree. Train your sensitives to sit always in the light, strong light, somewhat shaded, in order to counteract the effects of the vibrations given off by the actinic rays in the light, so that they shall not unduly interfere with our work during our experiments with you. Train your sensitives and your sitters to submit cheerfully at all times, when they are called upon to do so, to a close search of their bodies and their clothing, in order to prove to investigators that they have nothing concealed about them which could by any possibility be used in the production of fraudulent phenomena. Under conditions such as these, conditions which you imposed upon that fine sensitive, Florrie Cook, Mrs. Corner, again and again during your experiments with her, conscious fraud on the part of any sensitive or his confederates is, in my opinion, absolutely impossible. We have now to deal with unconscious fraud on the part of the sensitive, which really amounts to conscious fraud on the part of the entity controlling the unconscious sensitive. Under this section of our subject I include the substitution, without due notice being given, of transfigurations for materializations, to which we have already referred. 1. As this substitution can only, as a rule, take place in darkness, the remedy is a simple one. Refuse to sit in darkness, unless the controlling entity, the leader, pledges his word not to produce transfigurations without your consent, and further, pledges himself to produce proof of this, if called upon to do so, at any time during the experiment. We say this as much on behalf of the sensitive himself as on behalf of the experimenters, for should the conditions be broken at any moment when the transfigured sensitive, brought from his chair in a state of complete insensibility by the controlling entity, is in their midst, and is seized by any of the sitters, the result invariably is of course that, on turning up the lights, the unfortunate sensitive himself is found to be struggling violently in the hands of his captors, who at once proceed to denounce him as a cheat and a fraud, and prosecute him in a court of law. The officials of your society must deal sternly with any entity who produces a transfiguration during your experiments, without giving due warning to all present that he intends to do so, and should this occur a second time, you would be fully justified in refusing to take part in any experimental meeting at which the offending entity was permitted to operate as leader. I say this advisedly, and quite as much for the sake of the innocent sensitive as for the sake of the experimenters. Equally sternly should the officials of your society deal with any entity who passes from outside objects into the room where your experiments are being conducted, without giving notice to all present that he intends to do so, as great harm is done to the reputation of the unconscious and entirely innocent sensitive by such ill-advised action, if for any reason the entity finds himself unable to remove the object from the room before the close of the experiment. Let me explain this more fully by means of a simple illustration. The sensitive is sitting in his chair in a state of deep trance, and a materialized entity is about to leave the spot, close to the sensitive, where it has built up the body which it desires to show to the sitters. But finding that, for the purpose of identification, the entity inhabiting the temporary body should bring with him, shall we say, a peculiarly shaped walking stick which he always used when living on earth, a pause is made, whilst one of the entities assisting at the experiment makes diligent search in the neighborhood for a stick of that particular pattern. Happening to find one in a house, say half a mile away, he quickly passes it through space, through what you term solid matter, such as walls, roof, and ceiling, and hands it to the waiting entity, who walks out amongst the sitters carrying it, or leaning upon it, in exactly the same way in which he did when he lived on Earth. The entity, greatly to his joy, is recognized at once, the presence of the peculiarly shaped walking stick making the proof of his identity doubly sure. And there the matter would end in the ordinary way, for as soon as the controlling entity had returned to our sphere, one of the others would take the stick back to the exact spot from whence he had brought it for temporary use during the experiment. But let the conditions be broken, imagine that the materialized entity is suddenly seized by one of the sitters before it can return to the unconscious sensitive, and there on the floor lies the solid walking stick. Try as the captor will, he cannot hold the materialized form in his arms, for it will at once commence to fade away, however tightly he may clasp it, and will pass swiftly back to the sensitive. The clothing, the drapery, in which the figure was temporarily clad, will also be found to have faded away, without leaving the slightest trace of its presence, but there on the floor lies the solid walking stick, a truly damning piece of evidence against the unfortunate sensitive, for try as he will, the entity who ordered the stick to be brought into the room is altogether unable to get it back to the place from whence he had obtained it, owing to the disturbed conditions caused by the attempted capture of the materialized form, and although its appearance on the floor is in itself a marvelous proof to the experimenters of what can be done by an entity who understands the laws of passing matter through matter, as you term it, the investigator, who knows nothing whatever concerning these laws, who probably has never witnessed the apparent penetration of matter by matter before, although freely admitting the impossibility of the stick having been hidden in the empty room before the experiment began, at once jumps to the conclusion that the walking stick lying on the floor before him is proof positive that he has been tricked in some way by the sensitive, and that he is nothing but a swindler and a fraud. He then proceeds to expose him, in the public press and elsewhere, and in doing so, merely exposes his own crass ignorance of the laws which govern the production of physical phenomena of all kinds, and becomes the laughing stock of those experimenters who have progressed sufficiently in their investigations to be able to grasp the fact that such laws do actually exist, and are immutable. Before condemning any sensitive as an impostor, we would urge upon you first to make careful inquiry as to who is really to blame, and in many instances you will be surprised to find that, as in my little illustration, the offender is one from our dimension, and that the entirely innocent sensitive has been made the victim of certain circumstances over which he had no control whatever, the real offender, the controlling entity, escaping scot-free. In conclusion, we would ask you to remember always that the phenomena which we are permitted to produce for you, highly important as they undoubtedly are, must be used for one purpose and one purpose only, the higher, purer development of yourselves, whilst here on earth, your own spiritual development, that they are but the alpha only, not the omega, merely the beginning for the investigator, not the end. We come to you beings of earth to do something more than merely to prove our existence in another sphere, and to present wonders to marvel seekers. We mean serious and practical work for human enlightenment and progress. We come to teach a truer, brighter, and better philosophy of life than the world has yet had, to aid you in the solution of the great problems of your being, to inspire you with higher aims and nobler efforts for your own and for others' good, to give you the benefit of our larger experience that you may be incited to make the most and best of your earthly opportunities, and to do what we can to correct your errors, and to educate you for the practical duties of both the present and the future life. In fact, our purposes for your good are manifold beyond the demonstrations of our presence, and those investigators who stop short with phenomenal manifestations, and do not make them stepping stones leading upwards to the great temple of spiritual truth, are but idle spectators of a dumb show that may amaze and perhaps amuse them for a time, without adding anything to their mental or spiritual growth. After receiving tests enough to convince a reasonable mind of the reality of spirit intercourse, the clamor for a sign should cease, and where it continues month after month, and year after year, as is lamentably the case with many, it evinces a morbid condition of mind, and the constant attendance at experimental meetings to obtain a sensuous phenomena becomes a mental dissipation, ending in fanaticism, and a waste of time, money, and vital force, if nothing worse. Appendix. During the 4 years 1909-1913, a series of carefully conducted experiments were carried out under very strict test conditions in France and Germany, by a number of scientists headed by Baron von Schrenck-Notzing of Munich, a medical man, described as one of the greatest of German authorities on this subject, in an endeavor to solve various problems connected with the existence of the plastic substance, which he has named teleplasma. The results of their investigations have now been published by the Baron in a large volume, freely illustrated with photographs and sketches, entitled Materializations Phenomen, the photographs showing clearly both the vapor-like and the dough-like substances in the atmoplastic and pachyplastic one stages of the evolution of the complete teleplasma. One, as I venture to term them. This is seen to be issuing from different portions of the bodies of the sensitive bee, and actually passing through the fine meshes of the muslin in which their bodies were frequently enveloped, the sensitive's hands, and sometimes their feet as well, being held firmly by the experimenters. And more than this, they obtained on two occasions portions of the teleplasma, which were submitted to analytical and microscopic examinations. The results are appended. The sensitives were two young women, Martha Berengt, aged 23, and Stanislawa P., aged 19, both of them, in the cause of science, voluntarily and without payment of any kind, submitting themselves to the most searching examinations and most stringent tests, sitting, always in red light, even entirely nude during many of the experiments, and freely permitting the medical men present to examine every portion of their naked bodies at any moment. 1. Both were frequently hypnotized. This should have been avoided. G.B. The 200 photographs, including a cinematograph record, were taken by flashlight, and on one occasion no less than 9 photographic cameras, set at various angles, were exposed on Martha simultaneously. In order to avoid the constant repetition of names, I will refer to the 3 experimenters from whose reports I have quoted, as A, the leader, B, and C, a scientific skeptic of note. Those who have investigated the phenomena termed materializations closely, are well aware of the fact that before an entity can appear in either a partially or fully formed, temporary, body, it must procure from the sensitive and the sitters material to be used in 4 different ways, viz. 1. The formation of the solid portions, such as bones, skull, teeth, nails, etc. 2. The formation of the soft portions, such as the flesh, the heart, lungs, intestines, etc., and an outer skin, colored either white, yellow, brown, or black, according to the alleged nationality of the controlling entity during its earth life. 3. The formation of the hair on the body, either dark, fair, or gray. 4. The formation of clothing of various materials and colors, and on reading the abbreviated reports, it will be noticed how greatly the descriptions vary, just as one would anticipate, seeing that the teleplasma was handled indiscriminately by A, B, and C during the atmoplastic and pachyplastic stages of its evolution. A, on handling the pachyplasma, reports that his fingers touched a firm, dark, nearly black-looking, substance, comparable to touching the dark skin of a mushroom. Again, a firm, cool, damp substance, which vanished on touch. Again, a damp, cold, band-like webbing. Again, its touch gave the impression of an organic damp substance. He is permitted to place his hand in atmoplasma issuing from the sensitive, and says, I had the impression of destroying as it were a spider's web. Possibly a portion of 4, falling into clothing. G. B. B observes a kind of veil proceeding from the sensitive's neck, it hangs over her arm, and descends to the floor. B's hand is led by the left hand of the sensitive, which B is holding firmly, holding her right hand, towards the veiling, and grasps it. Possibly a portion of 4, clothing fully developed. G. B. Later B reports, I suddenly felt a cool, sticky mass touching my hand. I held it firmly and drew it carefully towards me, without releasing the right hand of the sensitive, C holding her left hand. The mass elongated itself in my fingers, hung down from my hand, and I was able to observe it for 1 or 2 minutes. As I continued to draw the matter carefully asunder, it disappeared from my hand. B describes it as a flat, streaky, thread-like, sticky, goo, living substance, without smell, of light gray-whitish color. My fingers remained damp from the contact.